Alrighty, another weekly update, another hotel, another state, same country though. So big upgrade, frankly, in terms of my mental health to actually not have been flying in. In fact, I can't remember if I mentioned it last week. I know last week I did this, so I was in a garden with birds and things like this. It was very picturesque. I was back on the Gold Coast. I decided to drive to Sydney just because it doesn't mean going through airport security and airplanes and things again. So I worked out, I've actually done 45 flights this year, which based on where we are in the year, I must mean more than one a week. Now, to be clear, like, I don't mind flying. I don't have a problem with flying. The bit that I hate is traveling to the airport and then going through the security and then finding a lounge, which is often pretty crappy in most places, to the point where I just end up going, I'll just sit in a cafe somewhere or something instead, and then waiting and then getting on the plane and getting all your stuff out and all that sort of stuff. Once I'm there, happy days. I'm sitting there and watching movies, people bring me drinks, it's fine. But it's the friction of the getting onto the plane, and then you get off the other end and it's like reversing the whole thing, except for the security bit. But, you know, the luggage, customs bit, have to deal with that. So I'm quite happy not flying, and I've decided that as much as possible for the rest of this year, I'm going to drive to events that I have in Australia. So I drove from the Gold Coast to Sydney a day last week. What day was it? Was it Saturday? No, it was Sunday. It was on Sunday. And it was great. I was in the car the whole way. Obviously, I drove. Listening to my own podcast. When I say my own podcast, I don't listen to myself, just in case you're wondering, because that'd just be super, super weird. The podcast that I decided to listen to. So the difference between sort of flying and driving distances like this in Australia is that if I was to go to the airport, I'd normally try and get there a couple of hours beforehand just to be safe, so add another half hour on. So there's 2.5 hours, an hour and a half in the air, so what are we up to there? There's 3-4 hours. Then you get to the other end, get your bag, stuff like that, hotel. You're basically at 5 hours, door to door, and then, of course, the check-in and find your room and all sort of stuff, which you got to do either way. But let's just say door to hotel door. There's 5 hours burned anyway. Now, it's about 9 hours worth of driving time when I drive from the Gold Coast to Sydney. So on the one hand, it's 4 hours more. On the other hand, there's just so much less friction, and I enjoy it. I like driving. I like my cars. It's a relaxing thing. So that's what I did. I drove here instead. I'm happy with that. So I am in Sydney, and if you're on the video and you can see the picture just behind me, that is Sydney in the picture. No Harbour Bridge, no Opera House, but the tower's there and the rest of it's under fog. Regardless, believe me, I'm in Sydney. So I have been here at NDC this week, so I did my two-day Hack Yourself First workshop Monday, Tuesday, and it was actually the first one I'd done since NDC Oslo in June, July, August, September, like 3 months. Wow. And it actually felt like quite a long time, and it's always funny when a little bit of time passes and then a bunch of stuff is suddenly different. I'll give you a good example, a few things that come immediately to mind. I normally use a service called Entropay, entropay.com, to demonstrate how to do enumeration properly in terms of password reset, like, you know, not disclose the fact that an account exists. Turns out Entropay's dead. So they're gone. That doesn't work anymore. So that one has changed. I can no longer show EV in Chrome, because EV doesn't exist in Chrome anymore, not without drilling down into the certificate. So that was different. And it's only next week that Firefox gets killed from its browser as well. Mozilla gets it killed from their browser. So I've got to figure out, like, the next time I do this workshop, how am I going to show EV? I have to have, like, screen caps or use Edge. I wonder how long it's going to stay around in Edge for. That's a good question. So, you know, stuff like that constantly changes. It's a little bit of a reminder that it's just a constantly changing industry, which is one of the things that makes it really interesting. So I did that, spent a couple of days doing that. I've done a bunch of media stuff while I've been here as well. They did a really interesting podcast yesterday morning with a non-tech person, but someone really interesting not even in the industry, in Australia. So when that's out, I'll share links to that. That'll be an interesting one. Did some more media with SSW yesterday afternoon. So this is Adam Cogan's company. Some people know Adam. He's a pretty prominent Australian bloke, a mate of mine. So I did some interview stuff with them. I think I did something else today. Oh, yeah, I did a totally different private event today because I didn't have enough events on. And, of course, I did do my NDC talk earlier on in the week. And what I decided I'd do in this update, because clearly I have not had enough time to do much else, is I'm going to go through and sort of recap on some of the tweets of the week. I did that a couple of weeks ago. People seem to like it. So I'm going to recap on that talk as I come through because there's some really good tweets with that and some photos, and I sort of picked up on the highlights. So with that in mind, sort of going back through the things that I tweeted during the week, and in fairness, like that, this is not just me cheating trying to do an easier weekly update. That's usually the stuff which is relevant and newsworthy. So things that I thought were interesting here. One of them really stood out, and it did upset some people. Emily Stark. Now, let me get Emily Stark's correct title right. Security engineer working on Google Chrome and Blink, trying to make the web a less scary place. Now, Emily is a super, super smart security engineer, and everything she has to say is always really interesting when it comes to how Google is designing Chrome as a browser, particularly around things like visual indicators. And Emily's in a thread just here, and she's replying to someone who says, given that the EV visual indicator has finally been removed this year, should we expect the removal of the padlock visual indicator in 2020/2021? So the question here is really addressing whether or not there is an ongoing need to have a padlock icon in the browser. Now, as soon as I start sort of raising that, you can see where some people might start to lose their mind because they go, oh, my God, otherwise how do people know it's secure unless there's a padlock there? And I think this is sort of one of the talks I do as part of my workshop as well. It's worthwhile looking back at history and where we've come from and where we're going. So if you go back, let's say, just for safety's sake, we'll go back 3 years. Now, 3 years ago, when you went to a website served over HTTP, there was no visual indicator about anything being secure, obviously, or dangerous. It was just like you were on a website. This is the default experience. And what would happen back then is that then you'd go to a secure website. Let's say you go to your bank, and it would be served over HTTPS. And because HTTPS was special, there'd be a padlock icon. And back then, of course, Chrome used to say secure as well, and stuff used to be green. Doesn't say secure or green anymore, still padlock icon. So it was almost like you are now on an exceptional experience, a secure experience, so therefore you're going to get an exceptional visual indicator being the padlock. And then what's gradually happened in that space of time is that HTTP has started to be flagged as more actively dangerous. So, for example, we went through a phase there where if there was a password input field, and I'm talking about Chrome here, Firefox has sort of done their own thing, if there was a password input field or a credit card input field, then you would get not secure up there next to the padlock. And then if there was an input box, as soon as you entered anything into the input box, it would say not secure. So it doesn't have to be like password or credit card, it'd be like a search box. Type a single character and it goes, yoink, not secure. And then, of course, it must have been about October last year, I think, we got to the point where now the browser on any non-secure website, so any HTTP website, don't lose your mind, I know that there are other things about it that could or could not be secure. Any HTTP website, it says, by default, now not secure. So now we're sort of pretty much at parity insofar as not secure is flagged as not secure, secure is flagged as secure, even if it's just a padlock, but it's a positive visual indicator, and this is where we are. Now, according to Firefox, about 80% of all internet traffic at the moment is sent over an HTTPS connection. At what point do we say we no longer need to actively flag secure content as secure? And again, we're using the word secure just to imply the transport layer here. So for argument's sake, looking at the rate of growth of HTTPS over time, once it's at 90%, why do we show it? And for the longest time, there's been indicators from the Google Chrome team, among other security, experts, let's say people in the field, that as we progress, does it make sense to show a positive visual indicator for something which is the de facto default experience anyway? So this was the question. Now, personally, I believe that the answer is no, it doesn't make sense to show it anymore because once we get to the point where just about everything is HTTPS anyway, why are we bothering to show that icon? Let's instead more proactively highlight the dangers of an HTTP connection instead, because people are going to pay a lot more attention to a negative visual indicator. So, for example, say not secure with red in it or something like that. People are paying more attention to that than a little tiny grey padlock sitting up there which reflects the default experience in it. Now, Emily responds here. She says, we don't have a firm timeline yet, but 2021 seems plausible. we'd likely need to adjust the indicator for HTTP first, experiments are planned for late 2019-2020, to make it more of a warning on mobile, especially where we don't have the not secure tech. So if you go to Chrome on, say, iOS, and I believe it's probably the same on Android, HTTP doesn't actively say not secure. Now, mind you, it does say it on Safari, doesn't it? That's curious. And again, the thing to remember here is this is browser vendors doing their own thing, making their own decision, and they're free to do that because it's their freaking browser. And I'd say a little bit passionate there because it reminds me of all these discussions where someone gets upset about the removal of EV and says, browser vendors shouldn't be doing this. Well, they can do it because it's their browser. And incidentally, all of them have decided the same thing, or at least Safari, Chrome, and Firefox have decided the same thing. So I thought that was quite interesting. And I've also said, so I tweeted this and said, yeah, could we see the removal of the padlock icon in Chrome for HTTPS in 2021? With so much of the web going HTTPS, it's an increasingly redundant indicator. More prominently flagging HTTP as dangerous will make more sense in the future. And then people wanted to argue with me about whether it's dangerous or not. Oh, come on, get over it. Like, this is what's happening. I followed up. Further, it would start to get us away from the ambiguity the padlock creates. Words like secure and trust are too easily misinterpreted. Over time, making HTTPS normal and not worthy of a visual indicator will greatly simplify the UX. So I do agree that the padlock, and especially the word secure, did imply things to people which were not consistent with what they actually meant. Now, we could argue that this is an education problem, we could argue that the UX wasn't good enough, whatever it may be. The point is that once that's gone and normal no longer needs to be flagged, it does take us away from that ambiguity, and then we can all start to argue about what's the right visual indicator for a non-secure connection and should it be called dangerous or not secure, I don't know. That'll be a different argument, but we won't anymore be arguing about the default experience on almost every website in the world. Okay, good. Next. So, that was that. What else has been happening here? Pitney Bowes. Pitney Bowes was affected by a malware attack which impacted some systems. Another day on the internet, really, isn't it? Interesting one here. Sean Wright was talking about, there's a ZDNet article here, around most SSL certificate misissuance caused by software bugs and rule misinterpretations. And there's actually a quote in here which Sean has called out. It says, 14% of all analyzed incidents, CAs intentionally put profits over compliance and industry rules. Ouch, that one stings a bit, doesn't it? Now, Let's Encrypt didn't put profits over it because they don't profit. Some of the other organizations, maybe so. And look, I get it. They're companies. They've got to make money, but yeah, still. What else in here? Someone's very happy about the workshop at NDC. That's lovely. I've shared a link here. Security flaws expose personal data from home loan applications in South Africa. Again, kind of another day on the internet. Seems like South Africa has leaked a whole bunch of information there. It's a bit of a shame. Scott Helm was Scott was doing some filming. And he says here, anyone who has done filming work will feel this pain, but they wanted a shot of me typing to users B-roll. Now, B-roll is when there might be a journalist talking about something and they just want an image in the background or a video in the background of you doing something cyber-like. So both Scott and I have done this a gazillion times, and the reporter will say something like, so can you just like sit there and look at the screens and move the mouse around and pretend you're typing on the keyboard? So Scott shared with who was typing, and frankly, it's all just crap. I felt like, well, it's literally crap. Yeah, kind of funny. Interesting one from Ryan Hurst. So Let's Encrypt has now been included into Chrome as a qualified CT log. So Let's Encrypt launched their CT log recently. That's now been rolled into Chrome. So good stuff for those guys. Now, on to my talk. So I've been doing this talk called Hack to the Future. And you know, one thing to clarify with talks, because someone raised this during the week. They saw one of the pictures and said, haven't you done this before? It's like, yes, I have, because I do dozens and dozens and dozens of talks every single year, and I do kind of have to reuse some material. So what I do is I make sure that whenever I do a talk at a conference, I never do the same talk twice. Now, particularly for the NDC events, which I've been doing all over the world for the last 5 years, I make sure that I actually go back and I look at, say, NDC Sydney 2018. What did I do? Make sure that none of that is in NDC Sydney 2019. If, however, someone went and looked at NDC Minneapolis 2019, they're going to see a bunch of content that's the same. That's simply because I just do way too many talks to be able to make everything unique every time, and even as it is, it's a hugely laborious exercise. And keep in mind, again, talks like this for conferences like NDC, I don't get paid. You don't get paid for this stuff. Workshops, yes, there's a profit share thing. Talks like this are just because I enjoy doing it and I enjoy supporting the conference. So, yes, I'm going to reuse some work because I don't have the time to build everything from scratch every time. Now, even though that was the case, I did get my evals. It was, I can't remember if it was 142 or 144 green cards. So that they have a carding system. You either get green for, you know, loved it, yellow, meh, red, didn't like it. So let's call it 140-something green, one yellow, no red. It's so hard to get a completely 100% clean result. But can't complain with that because it's as close as possible to as perfect as it could be, at least feedback-wise. So anyway, what did I do in the talk? There's a few screen grabs in here. So I have this talk, which I've been calling Hack to the Future, and it's sort of a combination of things I'm seeing with data breaches and also some security controls and features and things which are emerging or are fairly new, particularly for many people in the audience, that I'd love to see people using more. So as we go through this, I do give it a little bit of context on Have I Been Pwned. One of the really cool things is every time I show Have I Been Pwned at like a dev conference like this, and there are, I don't know, like say 300 people in the room, and I sort of go, okay, so who's used Have I Been Pwned before? And just about everyone puts their hand up. And I got to say, like, it's massively fulfilling for me having created something with literally blood, sweat, and tears over this period of time. It was almost blood this morning because I walked into an open door in the dark. Not drunk. Let me just clear. Got up in the morning, hadn't turned the lights on. Anyway, it's really fulfilling to actually see people use your thing. And that's, yeah, every time I see all those hands go up, that's amazing. I gave out a heap of stickers yesterday as well, and I don't know, I get pleasure out of that. So anyway, I talked about Have I Been Pwned. I'll talk a little bit about the places that Have I Been Pwned has taken me. And I got a shot at Congress in here, where I ended up in Congress, bang on 2 years ago now, actually. And I'll talk about how weird it got. And there's a screen cap in here of a Shutterstock stock photo, which you can buy, which is just a photo of my socks. Now, very coincidentally, I literally have the same socks on today. For those about to code, we salute you, socks, quarterly provided by Sophos. So that's kind of how weird stuff gets. You know, somehow, like, I started this project in my spare time, which I thought a few of my mates would use, and then I'm in Congress with people taking photos of my socks. Fun times. I go and I talk a little bit about data breach disclosure and the difficulty in it. And I use the adult fan fiction website as an example. And that was an interesting experience. Probably the best way to understand that is go to troyhunt.com/recorded-talks and find one of my recent NDC talks from this year. And you'll see me actually explain the whole thing. Talk a little bit about LUAS as well, the Dublin Rail System. So they got hacked and someone completely defaced their website and said, "Some time ago, I wrote that you have serious security holes. You didn't reply. The next time someone talks to you, press the reply button." And I've got this in the talk because I wanted to just reiterate how important it is to be contactable if you have a security incident. Now, I then go on and talk about security.txt. And security.txt absolutely freaking rocks because it is a text file you put on your website with security contact information. So that if I find a vulnerability in your things or someone sends me your data or if anyone else does and they go to look at that security.txt file, they know, first of all, the organization has thought about this and they're actually serious about learning about security vulnerabilities. Second of all, they know who to contact. And thirdly, you have information in there such as your public key. So if someone wants to encrypt their communications, they can do that. Now, Scott's website, crawler.ninja, crawls the top 1 million Alexa websites every single night, and it pulls back a list of every website that has a crawler, a security.txt file. Check out that list. There's a bunch of big names on there. Every single domain of Google you can think of is in there, but a bunch of others as well. Dropbox is in there. BBC's in there. I found a bunch of Aussie ones in there when I looked at it during the talk yesterday as well. So, security.txt, do that. I've also, I think I'll just share a link to this one. I talk about the Nissan app. So a couple of years ago, someone in one of my workshops found that Nissan had a rather egregiously stupid vulnerability. I think that's not too much of a disingenuous way of putting it, where, can't believe this, the API key that the mobile app used to control things like the climate control of the car was literally just the VIN number of the car. So if you had the car's VIN number, the thing that's printed in the windscreen of the car, you had control of the car. So anyway, I go through and explain that, and I may have then used a photo of Scott, who had a Nissan Leaf at the time, and he helped me with this, used a photo of Scott, which is, what's the right way of putting this, doesn't possibly show him in his best light. Yeah, it's a big photo. It's on the big screen. But we have fun. Anyway, so I do that. A little bit more on that. There's a bit here as well where I actually wrap up this talk by trying to demonstrate, an IRL, an in-real-life example of what disclosure tends to be like. And we, you know, we're talking about disclosure of security vulnerabilities or data breaches, which, as I said before, in the Lewis example and same with the adult fan fiction one, can be painful, where people don't pay attention and you get responses from organisations where they clearly just don't understand what's going on. And in this talk, I talk about a YouTube account called The Lockpicking Lawyer. And in fact, The Lockpicking Lawyer did chime in on one of these discussions. And I do always make sure that if I'm showing anyone else's content or referring to other work that they've done, I do always name them. So go and check my videos out. I always talk about Lockpicking Lawyer. Anyway, he's an interesting guy because he goes and does physical penetration tests on padlocks. Go and watch some of the videos. Seriously, if you go into YouTube, look for Lockpicking Lawyer. They're fascinating because it's like, how big do my bolt cutters need to be to, say, break through this heavy-duty padlock, or can he pick them with lockpicks? Anyway, he's got this padlock here, which it's a biometric padlock, right? So it's a padlock where you just put your thumb on it and it unlocks. And the image is fascinating because there's a screw on the side of the padlock and he's got a little highlight, a little circle around the screw, and he says, you know, all you have to do is take out your screwdriver, undo the screw, padlock falls apart. Now that, to me, in and of itself is kind of hilarious, but the really hilarious bit here, and the reason why I showed at the end of a talk about data breaches, is he shows the response after he exercise responsible disclosure, got in touch with the organisation, said, hey, I took my screwdriver out, undid the screw, your padlock came apart. In their response, they say, this is the response from the company, the padlock is invincible to people who do not have a screwdriver. Ta-da! It's a finale as a talk. It's just insane. And it just so perfectly illustrates the difficulty that organisations have of actually understanding risk when I disclose data breaches to them. So that was kind of hilarious. Bunch of TikTok track in there as well. That's the gift that keeps on giving, the way that whole thing played out. Probably better just to watch some of those recorded talks, that one. All right, so what else is in here? A few other funny things. More photos of Scott, bad ones. I had a harbour cruise. So one of the things that we do with the NDC conferences in London, Oslo and Sydney is there's always a cruise. Sydney one is out on the Sydney Harbour. London is on the Thames. Yeah. Oslo, sorry, UK friends. The Oslo one's through the fjords, which is actually super cool. Went out on the one on Sydney Wednesday night, took a night mode photo with the iPhone 11, and it is pretty amazing. Now, at the moment, there are 636 likes on this, which is a lot for me. A lot of people seem to love it. And then, of course, a lot of people chime in and they go, oh, Android's had this for years, or you should go and see the new Pixel. It's going to... I'm happy with my phone. Be happy that I'm happy. I like the pictures. So, look, that's pretty much it for this week. The only other thing I see as I scroll up through my Twitter is that my pinned tweet is still about Project Svalbard, which is the sale of Have I Been Pwned. That is still ongoing. It is extremely laborious in terms of effort and many other things at the moment as well. I would love to talk more about it. I have to wait until the right time. I have in my mind already some really, really interesting talks that I'd like to do for conferences about building something like Have I Been Pwned and taking it to where it is today, and some of the things I've learned along the way, because it has been an absolutely amazing ride this year in both highs, lows, and things that most people watching this would not be aware of, or you know, quite understandably would not understand at the moment. So I hope in the future that there's a talk that comes out of that, and that it's an ultimately positive talk about the outcome. But I will just say for the moment that it is still happening, still forging ahead, still going to plan, but it is really starting to take its toll after this long. So if I'm a little bit quieter online or trying to just have a little bit more downtime, it's possibly because of that. That said, I'm still forging ahead with other things, including blog sponsorship. This week it's Varonis again. Now, I've had a long relationship with Varonis. I've created a bunch of courses for Varonis, which are freely available. If you look for my name, you'll find stuff on insider threats, ransomware, web security 101. This week they're talking about a course which is not mine, but it's still a free course, and it's about the 7 hidden Office 365 security settings you can unlock with PowerShell. So massive thanks for Varonis for still being there on my blog. They've been a long-time sponsor on many different occasions. And honestly, they're a great bunch of people. I often see them at conferences around the world. I've done a bunch of talks to them in the past too. So please go and check out their free course and let them know that you appreciate what they do for me. So thank you very much for watching this. Next week, I will be back on the Gold Coast, driving to the Gold Coast. And I will come from some very picturesque scene again. I'll see if I can actually get some kangaroos in it this time just for fun. Thanks very much for watching.